let's begin.
We're going to do the first half of the ISB paper, and then the ASBJ are going to do their paper, and then we're going back to the second half of our paper.
That's it.
Did I get it right? Yeah. Okay. Those are the rules.
Okay.
So with that, do I hand over to you, Craig?
Yes. Thank you.
So, agenda papers.
Good afternoon, ASAP members. As Sue just mentioned, there's three papers in the kind of agenda paper three series. Agenda paper three was prepared by the staff here, and then 3A and 3B were prepared by the ASBJ. So I'm just going to go and give a brief overview of the kind of the range and the types of transactions that the board discussed at its meeting in January 2018. And then I'm going to hand over to Nobu after that to present agenda papers 3A and 3B, which discuss the ASBJ's experience of virtual currencies, which is one of the topics that the board discussed in January.
Can you speak up a bit?
Yeah, sorry. And then after the ASAP discussed the agenda papers 3A and 3B, I'm going to go and ask, we're going to come back to us and ask the first set of questions on agenda paper 3, and then move on to the second half of agenda paper 3. In the first half of agenda paper 3, we described the transactions that the board discussed in January 2018, and we split these transactions into two groups based on two distinct features. So the first one is items held for investment purposes, and the second one is items held in a similar way to cash. And items held for investment purposes includes transactions involving the holding of physical commodities, digital currencies, and in some very specific situations, emissions allowances. And these transactions are described in paragraphs 14 to 30 of our paper. So then items used in a similar way to cash identified or discussed by the board are typically based on highly liquid commodities. They include a very specific commodity loan transaction that the Interpretations Committee discussed in March 2017, as well as some other transactions that have a kind of financing-like nature. And these are described in paragraphs 31 to 39 of our paper. So I'm going to hand over to Nobu to discuss the 3B.
Thank you very much. First of all, on behalf of the ASBJ, I'd like to thank you for giving us the opportunity to explain our standard-setting activities related to the accounting for virtual currencies. I'll use paper 3A, the presentation, and assuming that you have had a look at it, I'd like to quickly go through the key points in the presentation. The important thing to note is that our work on virtual currency was on Japanese GAAP. And the first half of this presentation will explain what we have in our Japanese GAAP standard. The second half of this presentation describes the potential issues to consider under IFRS. So let me move on to slide 4, which explains why we undertook this project. So the Japanese Congress amended the Payment Services Act in 2016, and virtual currency dealers became subject to financial statement audit. And Japanese constituents asked the ASBJ to develop accounting standards for virtual currencies, and we decided to work on a standard but decided to address only limited issues. And the major difficulty we faced was that the legal status of virtual currencies was not clear under the Japanese private law. To slide 5, the exposure draft and the final standard. We issued the exposure draft in December 2017 and issued the final standard last month. The standard will be effective, is already effective, beginning of the fiscal year that begins on or after April 1st with early application permission. Slide 6 explains the scope of the standard, and we decided to limit the scope to address the accounting for virtual currencies as defined in the Payment Services Act, except for those that were issued by the entity itself. And this would actually exclude virtual currencies that were issued by the entity, which means that the so-called ICOs, or initial coin offerings, would be scoped out from our standard. Slide 7 describes the definition of virtual currencies under the Payment Services Act and those that are not virtual currencies under the Act. I'll skip that. The accounting. Slide 8 describes the accounting for virtual currencies held by the entity on its own behalf. And we made a distinction whether the virtual currency has an active market or not. And if there is an active market, such virtual currencies would be measured at market price, which is fairly similar to level one fair value. It's a different terminology we use on the Japanese GAAP. And if an active market does not exist for the virtual currencies, those virtual currencies would be measured at cost, written down to the estimated disposal value if such value is lower than cost. Moving on to slide 9 and 10, which describes the accounting for virtual currencies held by a virtual currency dealer on behalf of its customers. We decided that a virtual currency dealer should recognize an asset as well as a liability for virtual currencies held on behalf of its customers. The assets would be measured in the same way as virtual currencies held by an entity on its own behalf, and the liabilities would be measured at the same amount as the corresponding asset. Slide 10 describes why we decided to recognize both assets and liabilities. And from slide 11 onwards is more of the basis for conclusions of our standard. The first question we asked is whether virtual currencies were assets. Our conclusion was yes. And even though the legal status of virtual currencies was not clear under the Japanese law, we concluded that they should be treated as assets because they may contribute to cash inflows to the entity through sales or conversion to cash. The next question we asked on slide 12 is, what type of assets? And our conclusion was that it was a new independent category of assets, and we concluded that virtual currencies did not fit into any of the existing categories for the reasons provided in this slide. Regarding presentation, we concluded that gains and losses from the sales of virtual currency should be presented as the net amount in the income statement. And slide 14 provides an illustration of the required disclosures. And this is an example for a virtual currency dealer, which would have coins on its own behalf as well as coins held on behalf of its customers. So in the case of an entity that is not a dealer, it would be more the presentation would be more simple. I'd like to move on to the potential issues to consider under IFRS. Slide 16 is an example of of accounting policies disclosed for a Japanese company preparing financial statements under IFRS. So for this company, they classified some currencies into inventory and other into intangible assets with indefinite useful lives, and the measurement would be the corresponding to IAS 2 or IAS 38 and 36. So under this accounting, the virtual currencies that are not inventory would be measured at costless impairment, which would be different from the Japanese GAAP standard that I just explained earlier. Slide 17 and 18 provide cases that led us to scope out ICOs from our standard. Case 1 describes a case where a company issues new coins. And the question was whether the consideration received should be recognized as income or liabilities. And we concluded that we could not answer this question because the legal status of the virtual currencies was not clear under the Japanese private law. Slide 18, case 2, describes a case where the issuer of the new coins assigns some of the coins to itself at no cost. And again, we concluded that we could not answer this question, and that was because we needed to assess carefully whether an economic phenomenon that should be accounted for actually existed. That is a quick introduction of my presentation, but I'd like to give you an update on our latest developments. The Japanese government has set up a committee to discuss the legal issues related to virtual currencies, ICOs in particular. And my personal speculation is that once this committee reaches conclusions regarding the legal status of these transactions, it is highly likely that the ASBJ will start working on the second phase of the project to determine the accounting for such transactions. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. thanks, Nobu. So the first group of questions we have on the for ASAP members are on the first half of our agenda paper 3, and they can find them on the top of page 11. So the first question is ask how common these transactions are in your jurisdictions, and then whether you're aware of any diversity in the accounting for those items. And the last question is if you are undertaking any activities in these areas. And so I'll hand it over to members to discuss those.
Yeah, and probably just to add that when Nobu's done his presentation for us, he's talked about digital currencies. From the paper, you'll see that we've looked at it a little more broadly. So we've looked at commodities, digital currencies, other types of instruments as well. So we're very interested to hear of the prevalence of all those types of instruments, including digital currencies.
Linda?
Okay. So happy to start. So, yes, we're very much aware of transactions in our jurisdiction. And we see them in terms of initial coin or initial token offerings. And as a result of the activity in that vein, the securities regulators in Canada issued a staff notice in August of last year with regard to how these offerings may fit into the existing regulatory guidance, whether or not they would be into the securities offering or some other offering, including whether or not the activity would be defined as a market activity in terms of the securities oversight. Was also interesting in there that they said that some of these products may also be derivatives. So there's just another view there. And so that staff notice, as I said, was issued last year. And as part of that staff notice, they said at that point in time, they didn't think a market existed in Canada under the definition of a market under our securities law. So that's one thing. We do have some listed companies that are very much active in this area. So we have, and I have an example of a regulated investment fund. And on our venture exchange, we have a company that mines Bitcoin, and we have a company that is a describes itself as a blockchain infrastructure company. When you go to the broader discussion around commodities or artwork, we're certainly aware that the banks are doing transactions where they take physical possession of the commodities for certain reasons. Artwork is less common, and actually, to be honest with you, artwork is more prevalent in the not-for-profit space where they have collections donated to them. And they have to deal with the fair value at the time of recognition as opposed to ongoing fair value. So less prevalence of artwork in the public company space. In terms of discussions in Canada, our IFRS discussion group had its first discussion on the topic in January of this year. That information is all publicly available on our website, but it covered whether or not cryptocurrency could be deemed to be an asset. It covered what type of asset, and the range of discussions went from intangible asset, financial asset, investment property, inventory. Quite a number of possibilities. And again, that information is all available on our website. We do think that we are teeing up another discussion on this topic potentially for June. We've got a list of them. We're not sure exactly where we'll land until we have the planning session, but a couple of the topics being suggested are, can the transaction fees earned by cryptocurrency miners be recognized as revenue? That's one of them. And then can the reward of newly created cryptocurrency on the creation and closing of each new block in the blockchain be recognized as revenue? So those are a couple of the things that have been thrown into the mix in terms of potential discussion items. Is there diversity in practice? Yes. When we look at a series of companies we selected, and we didn't restrict ourselves necessarily to Canada, but when we looked at some disclosures around sample accounting policies, you'll see there that some of them have called them simply cryptocurrency and classified them as a current asset. There's an other deposit. There's an inventory category. There's an other asset category. There's a trade receivable category. There's an intangible asset category. So it's pretty much, you know, pick your poison, because there's no clear guidance on how they apply them. So it's becoming more and more prevalent. We're going to be continuing to raise awareness in Canada by discussing it, but I think all of this, in our view, leads to the notion that the ISB could be helpful in doing something on a short-term basis to at least give stakeholders an idea of where they could be looking in current standards, and ultimately then probably a longer-term project around standard setting. But we don't think that the traditional standard setting pace is going to be fast enough to deal with this issue, or you accept the fact that there's going to be diversity. So, okay. Thanks. Kimberly?
So the first question about transactions in our jurisdiction, then firstly, talking about commodity transactions, they're certainly common, especially in Australia, so a range of commodity-type transactions, including standard trading activities by broker-dealers, precious metal loans, including gold, commodity repurchase transactions, transactions where interest in assets or expected revenue streams from assets being sold, and other types of commodity buying and selling with financing or prepayment elements. So a whole range of commodity type transactions. In terms of digital currencies, a low level of activity currently in both Australia and New Zealand, but certainly the feedback in both countries is that activity is increasing and expected to increase quickly, and we're getting constituents asking us, well, where's the accounting for these types of transactions, so definitely demand for standard setting activities. Emission allowances. New Zealand's got an emission trading scheme we've been for a while now, so there's active trading in the New Zealand units. We've got to the point of having an active market now. Other transactions involving trading in non-financial assets, a couple of examples from Australia include trading in bed licences in the aged care sector, and also some entities like funds are holding water rights for trading investment purposes. That's an example of the range of transactions. In terms of your second question, is there diversity? Yes, I think is a short answer to that question. And your third question, although we're not doing anything locally around this, one thing I did want to make you aware of is that the International Public Sector Accounting Standards Board has got a project on public sector-specific financial instruments that does include some relevant work there around monetary gold. So if you haven't looked at their project, definitely worth looking into.
Patrick?
Thank you. Well, first of all, I would like to pay tribute to the work that has been carried out by ASBJ, because I think we had the opportunity to exchange views on this. I think it's at one the same time very interesting and somehow brave in an area which is a bit... terra incognita, but we have to start somewhere. Second, we observe also lots of movements. Maybe more potential than real, but you have real movement on this market, and you have lots of projects. We observe, therefore, that it's a developing area and a risky area. We've been asked by a number of professionals, how should we account for that? And we have a discussion, but not more than that, because the standard setting is not ready yet. So we have established at ANC level a working group at the end of the last year, which is currently progressing. We don't know if the outcome of that will be a standard or a recommended practice. I tend to be careful because crystallizing an accounting treatment when we are not fully sure about the nature, should I say maybe the natures of those assets. So we still have to decide on this one. Third point, a serious warning about the use of currency, because these tokens do not have the characteristics which are normally considered as being currencies from a central bank point of view. So, and of course, this is a competitive advantage, to use a word that everybody understands, when maybe all the features are not cannot be associated with the tokens. So, what are the key points for us? The dealer side has been approached by our Japanese colleagues. That's highly commendable. You have the owner approach, but at the moment we decided to start from the beginning, i.e. to concentrate from the issuer point of view. Because quite frankly, when you see ICOs, you know, sometimes I wonder how people are going to account for that. Mm-hmm. And we see potentially, quote-unquote, three categories of tokens. Tokens in exchange of services. You can of course distinguish between tokens that are issued against cash or against other tokens that would be marketable. That's the, is it operated on the liquid market, or is it just a token that has no value because it's not recognized yet by the market? But most of the time, it can be transformed into cash somehow. So, first category, tokens against a future or an existing service. Second category, a right on the performance or a right on the value of the entity that is issuing tokens, in which case we would call that securities token. Which are, my words are absolutely inadequate, but I hope to convey the message. And the third one, which is more troublesome, is what I would call the exchange tokens, where you don't know exactly. A token is being issued on the basis that sometime it will be used as an element to pay for transaction. I have seen a document recently of people that are claiming that they will replace the credit card. So it might be a platform offering a service based on blockchain and replacing credit cards. So is that service or is that what I call an exchange token is an interesting question. So as you see, we are at the beginning of a, but we try to categorize. And of course, we are careful about, due to the volatility of the value of the tokens when they are traded, we are careful about the measurement and the recognition of profit. By the way, incidentally, the people, what is very interesting is to know what is the remuneration of the people that operate the blockchain and how the blockchain is being operated. Because we understand that certain algorithms limit the number of tokens to be issued, but that the people that are operating the blockchain receive an element percentage of what is being issued as a compensation. So It certainly is a fact of life, but at the moment we are at the very beginning. It's like going to Canary Wharf in the Columbus building. We are like a bit like Columbus. We don't know where we go, but maybe we'll discover a new continent.
Thank you for that.
Russ.
Sure, thank you. The FASB received an agenda request a number of months back regarding the accounting for Bitcoins, and the staff's been doing research, have been participating, even went to one large public accounting firm's, quote, lab to understand what's the extent of the use of Bitcoins in the U.S. market. What we have found so far is that We've yet to find a public company that has a material amount of bitcoins or other cryptocurrencies. They may take them for use of selling services or goods, but then they immediately, or within a relatively short period of time, perhaps by the end of the day, offload that. We are aware that some hedge funds and other investment companies do hold them for investment purposes, but U.S. GAAP requires those investments to be at fair value. We're also aware of some companies that have in the past purchased these cryptocurrencies in the event they need them to retain some of their previously held intellectual property that perhaps have been hacked in the past. That's not for investment purposes. That's just to have something in the event that they need to obtain back their legally owned intellectual property. We had a long discussion at our advisory council differentiating between blockchain and cryptocurrencies. And what we found was a lot of companies are studying the power of blockchain technology for their internal accounting systems, their inventory systems, and other things. And there's much more power in looking at the books and records of a company, the management systems in blockchain. And that is could have a way to change the level of auditing, could have a way of changing and reducing the cost associated with producing financial information. That's really what our advisory council talked about. With respect to your other questions, clearly U.S. public companies do hold commodities. There is a different accounting depending on your purpose of holding the commodity and whether you're an investment company or if you're holding the commodity for use in your manufacturing process. Some companies hold emission allowances, although really certain states, specifically I believe California is one that has an emission allowance or trading scheme, but not all states do, and we never were able to get it through the federal system. So it's not as significant in the U.S. as perhaps it is other places. With respect to diversity, there may be some diversity related to the cryptocurrencies, but it hasn't been material or significant to really worry about this. That said, the Securities and Exchange Commission has been pursuing fairly aggressively and they've been very public about it related to the issuers of the cryptocurrencies and whether or not those initial coin offerings act as securities offerings. And if so, they've said, well, you need to be regulated by the securities regulator. And in some cases, they did not appropriately comply with the existing securities regulation. I do want to commend the Accounting Standards Board of Japan. I do think what they did showed great courage, and I personally believe it's a very good and thoughtful approach and supportive of what they had done. And so at this point at the FASB, we're staff doing some final research, and we will at some point ask the board whether or not they want to add the agenda request to the FASB's agenda, but we have no particular time period of when that vote will take place.
So Nobu, I didn't hear your introduction, but your standard is only pertinent to dealers.
It's for any entity, but we did scope out those that are issued by the entity itself.
Okay.
So if you invest in them, you're in the scope. So it's dealers and other holders, yeah?
Any other holders, yes.
Okay. But you probably have the same issue in Japan that public companies do not have a lot of this stuff, or?
Public companies do not. Just as Russ said, they would usually convert it to cash immediately.
Yeah.
But for our motivation of starting this project was that those dealers would be subject to financial statement audit, and those companies asked us to develop standards for it. So
okay, that
was how we started the project.
Yeah. Chris?
Thanks, Hans. So, consistent with others, commodity loans are very widespread within AOSSG. Less clear are with digital currencies, but Korea, for example, mentioned that they have somewhere around 37 crypto exchanges that are operating. So the clear implication is that these types of transactions are increasing in size and nature. But it is at this point mostly individuals rather than the companies themselves that actually hold that. That's also quite similar in India. In terms of diversity, certainly in terms of commodities, widespread diversity in what people are actually doing, and that was from all countries, Korea, Japan, India, Australia. And in terms of activities, it's not huge amounts of activity apart from Japan is clearly leading the way. But Korea has given some guidance that if there's an active market, they think fair value accounting is appropriate. But everybody else is really sitting and waiting for you.
Waiting for us. We were waiting for them. You.
Thank you. Before this meeting, we did some outreaching activities with our major banks, accounting firms, and some regulators. According to the feedback received, the most prevailing commodity loan transaction in China are gold lending or gold lease. It's also noted that some transactions include a gold lending or lease contract and a swap contract with the same counterparty. And the local regulator believed that the gold was used in a similar way to cash. And in terms of the accounting treatment for gold lending or leasing transactions, they are diverse in practice. The reporting entity may apply IAS 2, IFRS 15, or IFRS 9, depending on different situations. This is the first point. Then I would like to say something about the cryptocurrency. First of all, in China, you know, last year the central bank with other regulators published an announcement to prevent the risk of issuance of cryptocurrency. And we had a chat with the central bank. Now, in China, the ICO is prohibited in China. And ICO is regarded as illegal public financing. And maybe in the future, the regulators said, maybe in the future, the ICO will be more and more, the regulation on the ICO will be more and more strict in the future.
How can you be more strict than forbidding it?
That's just the perspective of the central bank in China. Then the announcement published last year also said that the trading platform should be closed in mainland China. But in practice, they also noticed that the out-of-counter transaction might exist. And the holder can also trade at some overseas platforms. That's the second observation. And from the perspective of the central bank's view, they regard the cryptocurrency as financial assets. That's they said. They said that the nature should be financial assets. It's not the not means of payment in China. And it's not issued by the monetary authority, so it's not the fiat currency as well. In practice, although the ICO is prohibited and the trading platform are closed, but some entity did hold the cryptocurrency, but not for the public companies. Just a small population of the entities. That's the situation in China. And we also have some rough numbers about the development of the cryptocurrency in the world. You know, the development of cryptocurrency might be beyond our imagination. I have some rough numbers. By the end of 2017, there are more than 1,400 kinds of cryptocurrencies in the world. The market capitalization is nearly $600 billion by the end of 2017. That is 330 times of those in 2016. So you can see it developed very rapidly. And as far as I know, the regulation on the cryptocurrency is also a focus of is one of the topic of the G20. And the monetary authority attach much importance on the risk of the cryptocurrency. So taking all this situation into account, we think maybe, just as Linda said, maybe it would be helpful if the ISB could do something in this regard. Although we also realize that the cryptocurrency is still in the very early stage and the market is not mature, but the transaction really exists, maybe how to account for them is a problem. And let's come back to the accounting issue. We do appreciate that the Japanese colleagues did to do something in this regard. And in our opinion, there are at least three parties to the transaction or to the arrangement: the holder, the miner, and the issuing entity. For the holder, the accounting is relatively simple, and some accounting firms in China believe that the fair value through P&L is the appropriate measurement basis for the holder. But the problem is, under IFRS, under current IFRS, we are stuck with the intangible assets standards at present. And under the IAS 38, the intangible assets, it can be measured at cost or fair value through OCI. This thing is not appropriate. So they suggest ISB making a quick fix to these standards to reflect reflect the substance of the cryptocurrency from the holder side. That's a holder. And for the miner and for the miner, the accounting issue are relatively simple as well. And but for the issuing entity, just as Patrick said, for the issuing entity, the accounting issue are most complex. Nobu also mentioned that the proceeds received from the proceed received should be recognized as liability or revenue. We don't know. And some people maybe think it should be recognized as equity. So equity, liability, revenue, which one? I don't know. And if it's revenue, what is the recognition period? That's also that brings a lot of problems. Even in the Japanese paper, also, although we acknowledge that the fair value is appropriate for the holder, but there are still a lot of problems because you use the fair value to measure the cryptocurrency, but it's different from the stock exchange. The stock exchange we have, for example, in China, it only start at the 9:30 in the morning and then closed at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But for the cryptocurrency, the price fluctuated 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It changed all the time. If you're using fair value, which value should be used? And if you're using the averaged price, it's still a lot of it's still a lot of volatility. So it's still a big problem for the cryptocurrency. That's all.
Okay, thank you. Sven?
Well, so far we didn't have so many touch points with cryptocurrencies from a standard setup perspective, probably for similar reasons Russ has mentioned, that we have probably some retailers who are accepting bitcoins and other cryptocurrencies but try to settle them quite quickly also for risk management purposes. And companies really holding bitcoins are, I would say, quite limited, or at least they're not very, let's say, publishing this information proactively, because they're using it, as I think others have mentioned, for blackmailing or other things in that area, usually, right? So that's the typical use I've heard. So it's not very very easy to get information around that. What's your treatment for that? Which is probably the reason so far no one has come to us and asked, could you give us a solution for the accounting? Probably coming with back to your questions in the paper on in these investment and cash categories. I think from a conceptual perspective, it's a good starting point to have these two lines of thinking, because they are indeed, I would say, these two completely different ways how you could use using as an exchange mechanism, so like cash, and we can call it currency or we can call it something else. I don't mind, but I think the accounting impact should be a similar one. On the other side, this investment, which I probably would more call trading, probably not gambling, but trading. Yeah? And the reason is that investment for me always has to do something with a return. Interest, dividends, rental income, some sort of where you base your fair value on some sort of DCF inputs that I would like to see, which is not the case for most of these currencies, which is really like artwork. You buy them and then just speculating on some sort of market effect, which is for me something different. So this is why I don't like any sort of analogy with IS-38 or IS-40 or something like that. Having said that, I think the starting point is good to move into in that direction. The earlier comment on the market capitalization probably is a good example of what is, in my view, the much bigger issue than just accounting. I mean, I've also had similar numbers of the market capitalization end of 17. If you go to the market capitalization as of today, it has collapsed. It's one-third of that amount. No, because most currencies have come down to a third of their values a few months ago. So my perception is first move should be regulators and try to design how can financial markets work with this, and probably it's not accounting to be now the first step and try to solve any issues around this. And we have heard a lot about fair value measurements and imposed in that direction. And I know it's a point in time measurement principle. Anyway, I have always certain problems if we have a very, very high volatility and then you try to base a fair value measurement on something, you can always challenge, isn't that really a useful measurement in this perspective? And for example, this bubble, I would say we've seen that in the end of 17 is probably a good example. Let's imagine this, there would be a global standard for fair value accounting on these issues. What would be the effect as of today? So that's probably also the worst considering, but I still feel it probably it's a little bit too early to really come out with a good designed solution for that, because before we have a really, let's say, proper reaction from regulator side. Where I understand probably some regions are a little bit further than Europe. My view is Europe is quite old-fashioned in that regard. We haven't heard that much from a regulatory perspective on that as well. So, so probably it's for other regions to go forward and be first in the market scout.
Andrew, sorry to keep you waiting.
Best or last, I think. on the digital currencies or digital assets, seems to be some people's preferred phrase, we've had a couple of consultations now with our technical expert group and consultative forum of standard setters, and we haven't researched this scientifically, but the sense I get is whilst there's a high level of interest in the topic, looking at the core market for IFRS in Europe, which is companies listed on regulated markets, it still isn't a particularly prevalent or material issue, which is not to say that there aren't particular entities using IFRS, for which this is their entire business, but big picture, similar to what Russ said, and I think consistent with what Sven said, on pure materiality grounds, this needn't be a priority for the IASB, but I fully acknowledge, given the risks, given the amount of attention from regulators and just the general level of interest in what's a sort of evolving and exciting and interesting subject that maybe the ISB should take a look at it. Various people in our groups did say that they've certainly encountered a wider range of transactions involving commodities, lending and leasing and repoing, etc. Again, I can't say they are particularly, we haven't measured their materiality, but there are clearly a wide range of transactions. Now, there's this, you know, these questions are grouping together a bunch of different things and a bunch of different transactions involving a bunch of different things, and not everyone quite saw the common threads that you were trying to bring together here. You know, the transactions that we heard about involving commodities sounded more like trading and financing type transactions than investing, if you were buy into that being a difference there. And used in a similar way to cash, I can see how that phrase might apply to digital currencies or digital assets, but it's not obvious that would apply to artwork, for example. So, you know, going from this very specific fact pattern submitted to the IFRIC, where I would agree with the IFRIC's analysis, there might be some gaps in the literature, to this potentially very broad list of asset types and transactions is quite a journey. As for that diversity in accounting, well, probably, but until we've looked more specifically at the particular transactions we're dealing with, I think it's difficult to answer that question with any degree of confidence. As for activities within Europe in this area, again, back on the digital currencies, then I won't speak for the standard setters represented in the room. They have or can speak for themselves. But looking at other national standard setters, there are one or two pockets of activity, but not all that much. And I will just mention that EFRAG recently published a consultation on potential future research projects, and something, not quite sure what, something on digital assets is one of the projects we're consulting on as a potential research activity, but hopefully the feedback from that will give us a better insight from our constituents on where they'll see that in the prioritisation.
I saw a statistic in the Netherlands that around, I believe it was a fourth or a third of the population was dabbling in cryptocurrencies.
Good luck to them.
That's enormous.
You know, one day I saw an article that said that one of the top five Google terms was how to buy a Bitcoin with credit card. Yeah. It was Croker.
Well, there are virtual currency trading platforms advertising on the London Underground these days, so I think that tells you something.
Sue, did you want to say anything about what...
No, I think I'm looking at the staff to make sure I don't say anything that's going to make them cross, but I think one of the things that we might think about is whether it would make sense for the Interpretations Committee not to do an interpretation per se, but to at least look at a mapping exercise of what our literature says now and where bits and pieces might you know, already apply to give people a little bit of direction at least, and or whether if we decide we do need to do some work in this area, whether we should use the Interpretations Committee to help us, given they've got sort of relevant experience at the moment of the types of questions that are coming up. So that's another question.
And I think Craig's going to talk to that now for the second half of the paper. Just to sum up what we've heard, because this will tie nicely, I think, to what Craig and you'll contribute to now. From the first questions that we asked, I think there was a general view that Japan had been very courageous in taking the first steps to do some standard setting in this area, and certainly there was a number of representatives around a table noting that fair value might be the way to go. I think most people indicated they were seeing commodity transactions and they were very common, which I think is consistent with the IFRIC discussions in this area from 1 or 2 years ago. And in terms of cryptocurrencies themselves, it seems to vary depending on which part of the world that you're in. And, you know, there's also the issue, are they being disclosed? How are they being presented? And kind of chicken before the egg scenario, are they there and people are just not seeing them because people aren't aren't disclosing and accounting for them, or are people just not holding onto them in material quantities? Also, the point was made that whilst cryptos are evolving, we're also seeing an evolution in the regulations around them as well. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in that area. And there was also a view that it would be helpful for the ISB to do something, or the ISB or IFRIC perhaps to do something. And I think both Canada and China indicated it might be helpful to look at a short-term solution as well as potentially a longer-term solution. And I think that's one of the areas that we touched in our paper. So I'll hand it back to Craig to talk to that.
Yes. Okay. The second half of our paper provides a summary of three kind of possible standard setting activities that we've identified that possibly the board or the committee could undertake to address some or all possibly of the transactions identified earlier in the paper. So I'd just like to reiterate first that the paper represents only preliminary views of the staff, and the board has not discussed any of the possibilities yet, and it may decide that no standard setting is necessary. The possibilities being considered by the staff are, number one, an investment standard based on the requirements that were in IS 25, and this is described in paragraphs 42 to 55 of the paper. And the second option is amendments to standards that scope in specific transactions based on their characteristics, and this is described in paragraphs 56 to 59 of the paper. And the third one is a project to help entities to develop accounting policies for transactions that are not within the scope of an existing IFRS standard based on the characteristic of those transactions. And this project may require some amendments to standards to capture some of the transactions discussed there in the paper. And we discuss this in paragraphs 60 to 64. So questions 4 and 5 for ASAF members are on the last page of the paper. I'll point out that paragraph 8 contains some factors that ASAF members could consider when answering those questions. So do ASAF members have any comments on the staff's preliminary thinking? And do you think any of the possible standard setting projects described should be considered or not considered for in the future by the board? I'll hand back over to discuss.
Noble.
Yes, thank you. First of all, I'd like to echo Andrew's observation that this paper does address many issues that are not very similar, and so we probably need to reorganize which part you want to really work on. Having said that, if the ISB were to work or do some work on this area, we support the staff's approach in focusing on the characteristics of the transactions and the objectives of entering into the transactions. And whether the ISB develops a new standard or amends an existing standard should be considered once the scope and the direction of the accounting is determined. I think that should not come first. Regarding the proposal on the IAS 8, constituents in our jurisdiction have told us that the standards are unclear as to how close the transaction must be to a prior standard that does not directly apply by analogy. And clarifying this point may be useful, but we acknowledge that it could take some time to complete this part of the project.
Andrew.
Thank you. A few reflections on the three ideas. On a sort of updated IS 25 and investment standard, and we certainly got no objection to that. I would observe, though, perhaps consistent with what I said before, that going from the IFRIC submission to a potential investment standard is an interesting journey to take, and a project such as this, I would think, should be subject to the normal agenda consultation process and sort of take its place among the other priorities and suggestions for projects in which the ISB should be active. I don't see the IFRIC submission as being a reason for this project to sort of, I'll say, jump the queue, and sorry if that sounds pejorative. On a more detailed point, I know that's very early stage thinking, but you're looking at the definition in IS 25, not a standard I have personal experience of, by the way, but of an investment. But I think there's been some more up-to-date thinking on that, and you hope that an investment would be the sort of counterpoint of an investor, which is defined in IFRS 10 in a way that I think is quite contradictory to the definition. in IS25, because the IS25 definition refers to sort of wider benefits that an investor might get from the investee, but that would actually preclude an entity being an investment entity under the IFRS 10 definition. But that's a point of detail. And perhaps, again, connected with my previous comments, I think defining or having a standard for investments might be fine, but is there a distinction between investments and trading activities? And I think that's worth looking at, because that might result in different accounting requirements. That sort of connects up with the proposal to take a look at the scope of IFRS 9. And I guess it might, isn't much detail, which is fine, but here, but I guess that's looking at the sort of scoping paragraphs and the requirements on contracts to buy or sell non-financial items, and whether that might be sort of extended such that IFRS 9 would apply to a wider range of transactions. I think that could be promising. That could be worth looking at, because a lot of the transactions we heard about in our initial consultations, the commodity-related transactions, did sell, they were trading-type activities, and from what we heard, where companies are deriving their own accounting policies by reference to the ISA hierarchy, then fair value through profit or loss very often is the outcome of that process. On the ISA project, characteristics of transactions, that sounded like it was sort of taking a look at the ISA hierarchy and seeing whether that could be improved, which would be a good thing if it could be improved, but my first reaction would be that I'm not aware that it's bust, and looking to change that hierarchy would be quite an important and fundamental thing to do, so I'd tread with caution.
Linda?
So I just need to go back a second, because I omitted some comments on emission allowances. So we actually have some activity in Canada on that, and on our website you can find where we discuss the Ontario Cap and Trade Program. Interestingly, Russ, Quebec and Ontario are working with California. So California didn't find anybody in the U.S., but they found us.
There you go.
And then now B.C. and Alberta seem to be getting into the game. So I just advise you to have a look at our website. I've got a copy of what's available here, but you can have a look at that in terms of several approaches that we looked at relative to the accounting. That's all I'll say on that. I just wanted to respond to the notion that this topic shouldn't jump the queue and you should wait for another agenda consultation. That would cause concern. If you think about the numbers that you just offered, the amount of activity in this space could become very staggering. And when we were in Japan recently, that was when you were going through the notion of the hacking incident where people lost money as a result of, you know, digital currencies. And so from a reputational perspective, it would certainly seem to me as a standard setter that if this activity continues to grow and nothing is, you know, put in place to help guide people on for how they should account for this, isn't that worrisome for all of us as standard setters? And so certainly from my perspective, while I respect agenda consultations, and we do them in Canada, when someone comes to us with an urgent request, we try to be responsive. And so I'm just curious about how others feel about that, because I would find it worrisome to wait until your next agenda consultation for you to consider.
In itself, that would not be necessary. Yeah.
And we were actually quite careful in our last feedback statement we did on the agenda consultation to make the point that we use the agenda consultation sort of like a reboot.
Right.
So, you know, give us some input, now we'll do a sort of big analysis of the agenda. But to be clear that we could still make decisions along the way. But I think the thing we are being careful of, which I think is a very fair point, Andrew, is that we tried to get this, make sure that when the staff were bringing this to us to look at, we were looking at it in the context of other things in the pipeline to work out what the relative priorities were. So yeah, we are still trying to think about balance without actually having to wait till the next agenda consultation.
Yeah, and certainly we're supportive of that. It's just simply that, quite frankly, given the activity level in Canada, if we don't get anything here, then we'll have to step into the void. And as you know, we don't like to do that. You know, we are IFRS jurisdiction.
Level of activity of cryptocurrencies?
Yeah, yeah.
It's by companies that use IFRS?
Yes.
Because that is not the case in the United States as far, but it is the case in Canada.
Starting to grow. So I would just say that while we're not in a panic yet, we are being pressed to step into the void, and we're happy to do that on a short-term basis, but we'd like to work with you, you know, to move it forward.
All right. Kimberly?
So in terms of the approaches that you've asked about, I guess the first approach is the one that I guess we found most attractive, depending on how it was defined, because that was about some of the other comments that have been made about investments. What are we really talking about here? Are we talking about, you know, something that you're holding for long-term capital appreciation, or are you also picking up trading activity? So that wasn't really that clear. So the first approach, potentially in conjunction with the second approach, in some ways it's a bit about geography, really. Where's the best place for these kinds of things to sit? So where, you know, you've got a certain category of transactions that might find a natural home in IFRS 9, even though they don't meet the definition of a financial instrument, like we already have some arrangements with commodities in IFRS 9, then maybe that's the appropriate place. So certainly not ruling out approach two either. But sort of approach one, sort of seeing maybe, and for some categories of transactions, that may be the easier way to go in terms of providing requirements. The IAS 8 idea, I mean, it sounded good when you sort of read the title, characteristics of transactions. Well, of course, you know, you want to think about the characteristics of transactions. But the way it was outlined there, struggling to see how operational that would be, in particular noting you've said in paragraph 64 you're going to have to scope things out of IAS 38, clearly, because as has already been mentioned by others, IAS 38 is creating an issue because it's a catch-all standard, so things end up there, but it's often not the appropriate accounting. So if you go to the step of scoping out of IAS 38 and defining what you're going to scope out, why would you not go to the next step and say, well, what do you do now that you've scoped them out? It didn't seem to make a lot of sense to just scope them out and then have a bit of non-authoritative guidance that sort of saying, well, having figured out the pool of transactions, then let's explain how to account for them. A couple of, I guess, things to be careful about. Obviously, you know, as you said, this is just very much preliminary thinking, but there was, a bit of an alarm bell when it was mentioned that you might consider taking the commodity broker trader requirements out of IAS 2 and potentially moving them to this if there was a new investment standard, particularly when combined with some of the comments in paragraph 51 around measurement that you might only have fair value through P&L if it's an active market. We've got, you know, feedback that people would see that as a step backwards, that if you're a trader in these commodities, whether there's an active market or not, fair value through P&L is likely to be the most appropriate accounting. And so we wouldn't want to, you know, step back from that. And also to keep in mind that IS2 requirement is used by analogy in other situations. So I'm thinking in the New Zealand context in terms of emission allowances. Even before we had an active market, we had entities that were trading in New Zealand units, and were in those cases we're using the IS2 commodity broker trader type accounting, which we consider to be the appropriate accounting. So again, just to be careful that we don't take a step backwards in that scenario. Now, in terms of prioritising, given the whole range of transactions we've been talking about today, clearly the commodity transactions you've already identified are already prevalent. And so it would be sensible to look at those, but also would echo the comments that have been made around digital currencies and not being too slow in this space, because although they might be quite low prevalence now, I think everybody's expecting them to grow quite quickly, and we collectively are always criticised about how slow we are to set standards, and at the moment we're talking about not even necessarily putting them on our agenda. I think the feedback we're getting, it's concerning if we are going to wait until we've got a really big problem before we'll start thinking about solving it. Isn't it better for us to actually start that thought process now?
Russ?
Yeah, thanks.
I was going to first start with what's in paragraph 60 through 64. If you look at paragraph 60 and 61, that gives me the impression that what the scope of that project would be, really teaching people and providing educational material how you analogize. I don't actually think that's the problem you're trying to solve, and that would be much broader than this issue. If the problem you're trying to solve is that the accounting is clear that it should be an intangible asset, but you think that's the wrong answer, I wouldn't be providing educational material on how to make an accounting or auditor judgment. With respect to what's in paragraph and the other ones between 40A and 40B, I personally at this point would not take either one off the table. And the reason for that is, in essence, I view 40A as how management's going to use it. It's a business model approach versus 40B is a what approach, what it is versus how you're using it. Now, when you think about cryptocurrencies, I don't think you're going to get drastically different answers in most cases, but in commodities, you very well could. And in the U.S., we've had this issue. We seem to like to say we just recycle issues. For Japanese, I had to get recycling in there, but we just recycle the same issues. But what will happen is if you're an investment company, it doesn't matter. The how you're using it and the what it is has the same accounting. When you're not an investment company in the U.S., we've had issues related to commodities, and whether you're using the commodities for your own production cycle, that's at cost because it's an inventoriable model. But if you're going to use the commodity to do energy trading or other trading, then investors want that at fair value. And it seems very easy until you get questions about, well, what do I do if the oil actually moved from my trading facility to my manufacturing facility? What do I do with that? And so, to me, I think you're going to find that there's going to be pros and cons and an evolution of thought, especially in the commodity world, between views A and B. I don't think you'll see that in the cryptocurrency world because you don't use cryptocurrency in a manufacturing environment like you use commodities. So, again, my recommendation is if it's just solely a cryptocurrency, I'd focus on A and B. I wouldn't take C if what you're really trying to do is to say you don't want this to be accounted for as an intangible asset. If you broaden this to commodities, I think you're going to struggle between A and B when you are not an investment company. You're a manufacturing company that also has investment activities. But if you come with a solution, let us know because we haven't been able to find one yet.
Generally speaking, as for the possible standard setting activity by the ISB, we prefer the standard-based project at current stage. And considering the ISB's resources and time constraints, we don't believe setting a new investment standard would be a good choice at current stage. We don't support the third approach, IAS 8 project. That's the general comment. And as for the cryptocurrency, just as I mentioned, that in China, maybe it's not a very urgent issue at current stage, but it grew very fast, and even the ICO is prohibited, and and the transaction platform are closed. But for the mainland, for the companies in mainland China, maybe they have some subsidiaries in overseas, these overseas subsidiaries maybe have transactions on cryptocurrency. So, we suggest ISB to do something in this area, and I would like to emphasize that maybe some quick fixes to the current standards can help to accommodate cryptocurrency. For example, currently, cryptocurrency are scoped into IS 38 or IS 2, and a quick way to solve this problem is to scope it out from IS 38. So maybe some people can develop their own policies to account for this kind of transactions.
Chris?
Thanks, Hans. So a majority of members of AOSSG would prefer to have digital currencies treated separately to commodities. I think that was on the basis that they'd like the three components of the digital currency to be addressed, not just the asset piece. In terms of preference, if you're going to prioritise any of the particular issues, the issue they would like treated first is the commodity transactions, because that's more prevalent and really creating issues, and in particular gold loans were noted as being a major problem. Having said that, the members also thought that, similar to Russ, that you would want to pursue options A and B together, so the investment standard and the standard-by-standard approach, because I think they thought that you might run into some of the problems that were talked about in the investment property standard being for the longer-term appreciation piece, but somehow you need to deal with the trading aspects of it as well, and you might find the trading ones fit more comfortably in IFRS 9 as opposed to a separate investment-like standard. But there was general consensus that IS8 wasn't the approach to take, and again, that was for the reasons that Russ was talking about, that you're going to have to try and fix 38, so IS8 is not going to fix 38. And if that's the case, I think you're just taking people down a path that's going to lead them to an answer they're not going to be very happy with.
Sven?
I think it's a bit difficult to answer the question at this stage, because the answer is basically part of the solution. So if we had a standard which fits to certain issues or accounting problems, of course we can easily say, well, just demand a standard and we have a proper solution. However, what I've learned, we had a meeting with auditors last week, so what their starting point is that we have no standard which perfectly fits to the issue. They, of course, start with C and say, okay, IS8, what can we do in the current environment? And what I've learned from the auditors, basically, they're all over the place with analogies. Some are closer to IS2, others are closer to IS38, and it always depends on, in each standard, there's at least one criterion missing. Sometimes it's not a physical item, sometimes not a monetary item, and so none of these analogies really work perfectly. However, depending on what's your background, you probably see a closer merit with one or the other. So my recommendation for now would be really starting with a, let's say, new standard or a thinking from scratch, saying, okay, what is the issues we would like to solve, and then probably in the process coming to the conclusion there are certain things which are easier fit by amending a standard, which is, of course, always a quicker solution, I guess, in most cases. But I'm not sure if it really worked in this case. Having said that, I think it's very, very important to clearly define what type of transaction do we want to fix. Is it what you called investments, so basically holding certain commodities or cryptocurrencies or things like that, or what I've understood the Japanese have scoped out, the mining process, so the ICO bit, which is probably more IFRS 6 extractive industry, like, well, I don't know. Probably another analogy which is more or less useful. And third element, and I think that's what you've covered as well, is this on behalf thing. So holding it for a customer, which I would expect, this is probably something which is quite interesting from a regulatory perspective, also from accounting perspective, because we might probably have much, much more companies holding these things, like in financial institution thing, than really corporates owning the coins. So, and what I've understood from your approach, look for me a little like a banking sector idea. We are putting an asset and a liability on the balance sheet, which from a pure economic ownership approach, probably I wouldn't necessarily do if it's not my coin. So I can see all these elements, and this is probably also important to say, okay, do we want to cover this, or is it really purely I am holding a certain element for my own purposes? And that's the scope of the accounting issue, which I think probably is a little bit too narrow from what I've seen so far from your proposals as well.
Any other contributions? Yes, Alberto?
Very quick. We're not aware of companies in Italy using cryptocurrencies. certainly not quoted ones. Private people, yes, they like to invest in this risky business, especially these days where, you know, the interests are very low, so they are taking risk, but not companies. And the main reason, my personal perspective, is that we don't know how this gain or losses will be treated from the point of view of taxation. And therefore, companies are scared of entering into a transaction which the fiscal authorities might deem to be illegal or something like that. So we don't have this. For commodity, we know of companies producing jewelry that borrow the gold, produce the jewelry, sold them, and then with the money they repay the back the borrowing. But none of these are quoted, so they do not use IFRS at the moment. They could, yes. In Italy, almost everyone could use IFRS if they wish.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so maybe I'll just summarize it up briefly. Thank you, everybody, for your comments. What I got from that was that in terms of the approaches that we had proposed in a paper, most of the people around the table would prefer approach A or B, or maybe A and B, and there wasn't much support for the IS8 approach as articulated in the paper. Comments were also made around potentially if we thought IS38 was the wrong answer, that might not be the way to fix a problem. And I'll just add on that point, notwithstanding some of the comments that it might say in the staff paper, the board has not formally expressed a view on whether or not these cryptocurrencies fall within the scope of IS38 or IS2 or any other standard. Other considerations that came up was that a new standard could be something that might be worthwhile looking at, but obviously that depends on time, resources, and scope. And on the matter of scope as well, whatever we decide to do or decide not to do, as Craig indicated before, the board hasn't made a decision yet as to whether or not this is something we will take on as a project. But whatever we do, we will adhere to due process when considering both whether or not to take on this project and the scope of such a project. So hopefully that's a good synopsis or accurate synopsis of things. And thank you so very much for this was incredibly helpful for us. So thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.